From Johannesburg to Jerusalem, the world is always changing, growing and innovating. Join Benji Shulman for the next hour as he brings you the trendsetters, the thought leaders and those creating news before it happens. Only on the New Blue Review, your favorite Jewish culture and current affairs show. Every Monday at 9 a.m. right here on 101.9 Chai FM.
You're listening to 101.9 Chai FM. I'm Benji Shulman. This is the New Blue Review. Welcome to the show on this glorious spring Monday morning. Hope that you are doing absolutely fabulously out there and are having a great start to your week. And are looking forward to the show today, because I'm definitely looking forward to it. Our accent today is not on the current affairs side. It's actually on the cultural side. We are going to be doing culture from wall to wall today. And we're going to be later on speaking to Alistair Anderson, our regular cultural correspondent. But he's actually be traveling at the moment. He's been to the UK and Ireland, a few other places, so we're going to be finding some international culture, see what he's been up to as our culture vulture. He's also recently won a nice award, so we're finding in from him. But first, we're going to be going local and communal, and yet international at the same time, and talking about the movie-making business and a new film from the Jewish community, about the Jewish community, in South Africa, but from a little bit before right now. And the people who are going to talk to us about it, it's Brett Morris and Hilton Tannenbaum. They are the producers and directors of a new film called Just Now Jeffrey, which is a sort of coming-of-age film of a Jewish teenager in sort of the 1980s South Africa. So it's sounds like a great topic, and I'm excited to have you guys with us. Thank you, Brett, for joining us, and Hilton all the way from Cape Town.
Cool. Thanks for having us, man. Good to be here.
I think we're still trying to get Hilton on the line, but we'll keep working on this. We've got Brett in the meantime. Brett, I'm always interested with people who decide, who are not necessarily professional filmmakers, who decide, you know, I'm going to wake up and make a movie, because it is actually quite a complicated process.
Yeah, absolutely. Although we didn't grow up in the long form film business per se, we both of us are in the commercial advertising, commercial production side of the business, and between us have made, I guess you could say, hundreds and hundreds of little short movies in the form of TV commercials. So as much as we hadn't ever done a long form together before, we'd been doing that for a good 25 years. So we honed our craft in the advertising and production business. And this was our opportunity to put all of that skill to the test, which is what we did.
And all those networks and all sorts of people. I mean, I'm sure that must have helped, being able to know the technical stuff up front in order to make, you know, transferable skill from a 30-second ad, say, to a long-form movie.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, what's amazing about the advertising and commercial business is you get to try all sorts of things. So you're doing vastly different things from one ad to the next. And Hilton being on the director side, myself on the writing side, having grown up in the business, you know, you learn a lot. As Hilton always says, you've got to pretty much try a bit of everything in every ad. So in one ad you would do a bit of animation, in another ad you would do a bit of a green screen, then you would do stunts, and then you would do all sorts. And all of that comes together in a long-form movie.
Except I imagine for one thing, which is that most of the time, or maybe all of the time, when it comes to advertising, you're trying to kind of sell something, right? At the end of the day, there's a particular call to action or a donate here button or something like that. This is slightly different. You're trying to tell a story.
Yeah, absolutely. But again, great advertising has a story. Mm-hmm. You know, it has a little... It's a very short one.
It's a short story.
Yeah, it has a narrative arc. And the best and most compelling and most convincing advertising is the one that resonates as a story. But yes, it is vastly different. You know, as we always say, advertising was like sprints. So you get a brief, you dive in, you make it, and within a couple of weeks, it's done. Whereas this is a marathon. Making a movie is very much like running a marathon and still using the same skills, but you've got to be a lot fitter.
A lot fitter. Well, we're going to be talking about that journey and how long a marathon you have to be. Talking to Brett Morris today and Hilton Applebaum. They are director and producer of a new movie called Just Now, Jeffrey. And we're going to be getting into what exactly the film is all about. I'm Benji Shulman, and this is 101.9 Chai FM.
This is the New Blue Review with Benji Shulman.
101.9 Chai FM. We're talking today about movies and a local film crew, film duo, talking to us in the studio, Hilton and Brett, and talking about their new movie, Just Now, Jeffrey. Now, actually, Brett, I wanted to say, you know, before we get into where you can watch it or whatever, you at the moment aren't on a traditional service, and actually you sort of have members of the community, if members of the community actually want to watch it, you basically go off a website, and there's a special Chai FM element to it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, being an entirely independent film, we always knew that we were going to try some different ways of distributing the film. And so we're looking at all options. And where we're at now is we've actually got our own platform, which is kind of a new thing in the independent film industry. So you can access the film directly on justnowjeffrey.com. And we just, this last week, got onto Amazon Prime in the UK and the US as well.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so if you have a VPN, but otherwise just go straight through
justnowjeffrey.com.
Exactly. Now, Hilton, thanks for joining us. You're actually joining us from Cape Town, which turns out to be quite an important part of the film, because one of the ways in which the film is very strong, I think, is on the aesthetic, because the 80s looked a particular way. And it was very interesting, you know, you guys were trying to recreate a kind of a quote-unquote Jewish environment in Johannesburg, but you actually went with a Cape Town set. Do you want to maybe talk to us about what that was like, Hilton, and sure. Why Cape Town wins again when it comes to Johannesburg, but we don't say that too loudly.
Yeah, hi. How's it? Thanks for having us on. It was an interesting one because, yeah, as you say, the movie was set in Joburg in the 80s, and we kind of weighed up shooting in Joburg versus shooting in Cape Town. And Cape Town was chosen for a few reasons, because I live here and I didn't want to travel. So Brett moved into our house for a couple of months. No, that's not the main reason. We just found that there's certain suburbs in Cape Town that look like they're stuck in the 80s. And in particular, Belleville. Which really does. There are no big walls, there are no electric fences, the houses look as they did. And we even got luckier than that. Some of the interiors of the houses are stuck in the 80s. And the weird thing is, the two houses that we shot in, they were like that by choice. The woman who owned it now, it was her childhood home, and she wanted to keep it exactly the way it was when she grew up. So it's absolutely meticulous. You know, it wasn't a financial thing. She just loves that era. And it was super lucky for us because it had all the old stoves and it had the old furniture, which on our budget we wouldn't have been able to afford. So the houses really ticked a box over here. And then the school, Belleville High School, is known as a traditional school. So it's half modern. So they've got all the modern stuff. And then they've got a few classrooms that are traditional classrooms. So it's got all the old wooden desks. It's got the old chalkboard. And again, we naively thought we'd be able to afford to build those things, but we wouldn't have. So, yeah, we got really, really lucky. And then the final reason for shooting in Cape Town is our relationship with a whole lot of crew and suppliers here who really stepped up and helped us make a little money go a long way.
So talking about that, there was one element which I found absolutely fascinating, Brett, in terms of the production of the movie, is that to get this aesthetic and the interiors, some of the movie is shot inside something which really doesn't really exist anymore, which is a video store, and you had to create all of these videos, but that runs into copyright issues, and I just thought it was such an interesting aspect of creating an independent film about how you were able to get around that problem.
Yeah, there was another sort of a massive fortune, I guess, in terms of timing. You know, something like Midjourney, which is the AI platform that produces these amazing images, didn't exist sort of 6 months before we had started in a mainstream way. And as you say, we needed to create this 80s era, which required illustrations, posters, artworks, all sorts of things that make, really bring that world to life. But in order to do that from scratch, first of all, we tried to license it. And we would have loved to have some original movie posters in our video store, but they cost like $1,000 a piece, and that would have quickly eaten up our budget.
Yeah.
And even if we could afford to, if we had, you know, loads of designers working around the clock to try and create those posters, it would have taken a hell of a lot of time and not something we could afford. So because of this AI platform, we were able to create hundreds and hundreds of pieces of artwork. Every single video in that store was produced by Midjourney. And our production designer putting it in its individual box, posters on the walls of the bedrooms, all those things that really give a depth and a character to those rooms was something that we were able to literally create within a couple of days, which was really phenomenal.
And it's not actual, it's sort of, for an example, it isn't actually an Indiana Jones poster, but it kind of has a Harrison Ford-esque type character with a hat and that sort of thing. So it's sort of just close enough for the purposes of making a movie.
Exactly. So the way you'll prompt it is you'll tell it to do like a movie, action movie with a character that looks like so-and-so and feels like this, and it produces these incredible posters or artworks.
Absolutely fascinating, talking about the ins and outs of producing an independent film in South Africa. I'm Benji Shulman, and this is 101.9 Chai FM.
This is the New Blue Review with Benji Shulman.
101.9 Chai FM. I'm Benji Shulman. This is the New Blue Review. We're talking independent film this morning with Brett Morris and Hilton Tannenbaum about their new movie, Just Now, Jeffrey, about growing up in that kind of towards the end of apartheid South Africa. And I kind of wanted to ask about that. I mean, what was it about that particular era or that particular story that drew you guys to wanting to do this? Because it's not a bioepic, you know, no persons in this movie really represent anyone who I actually know, but clearly it comes from your own personal experience in growing up during that period.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we always said that we wanted to create a film that brought our voice, our unique voice in South Africa to life. We kind of grew up watching those American movies, British comedies and movies that we loved, but we had never seen our voice up on screen in a way that, you know, brought South Africa and that era to life in a truly compelling way. And we really wanted to tell that story in a unique way and bring all of that aspect to life without making it a political film. It was always going to be a comedy. It was always going to be about entertaining people and, you know, doing it in a unique way. We didn't want it to make it a truly political film, but we just wanted to be true to that era and really make it about our view and our childhood and bring that to life.
I mean, Hilton, that must have been also part of the challenge. It's difficult to make a film about anything. I mean, really, it's difficult to make a film in South Africa without like bringing politics into it, unless you really truly are from Cape Town and are, you know, about octopuses or something. But but how did you sort of manage that in trying to get that story across?
It's a great point, Benji, and it's a tricky one because you can't ignore the politics. You know, any South African story is inherently connected to apartheid and specifically the 80s. But as Brett says, we didn't want to make a political film. We wanted to make a coming-of-age comedy, the likes that we used to watch, just with our own voice. So we navigated very carefully around that. And what came out of that is, you know, there is the backdrop of apartheid. But us growing up in the 80s, you know, there was such a heavy censorship machine in South Africa. We never saw what was going on. People overseas would see it. You know, we'd get calls from our family and friends overseas saying, "Are you guys okay? There are riots. You know, there's a whole lot of hectic stuff going on." And our news was censored. Our newspapers were censored. So we truly were in this little bubble. And we thought, what an interesting thing. You know, you've got these teenagers with the internal angst and they're wanting to lose their virginities before the end of school and all the things that teenagers do. But unbeknownst to them, they caught up on the brink of a civil war and they're just kind of merrily going along until, you know, Jeffrey and Brad do get exposed to that world. And it's part of their coming of age and growing up in a different way, seeing what's going on around them that they were quite oblivious to.
It's interesting for me that in some ways, you guys have made two films about the past, right? Because on the one hand, it's the 1980s and this period and all of that sort of thing. But you've almost made a genre film, right? It's Van Wilder party liaison type vibe or sex drive or all of these sort of, which I don't think you could make anymore as a sort of mainstream film because of the way that the politics has operated. And it's almost like by making a film like this, you've also, by going back to that era, it's like you kind of can only make it as a niche film because otherwise you're going to get cancelled as a mainstream product.
Well, yeah, I suppose interesting point, but you know what it being a period movie does, it allows you to tell that story from that point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And that was also something that we were quite excited about. As Hilt said, you know, there was this really unique, fascinating backdrop that gave a unique color to that typical teenage story. And it is that. It is a universal story. But because it is niche, because it is so specific, it gives it a really unique lens. So, yeah, we wanted to tell it as a genre movie, but really, really make it unique because of where it was set and how it happened.
I think also, just to add to that, you say these kind of movies don't get made anymore. I do think it will come full circle. And then apparently Vince Vaughn and somebody else are starting a new studio of doing unwoke, less sort of careful stuff because everybody loves those movies like Old School and American Pie. Yes, you have to do it differently now. But I do think the pendulum will swing back again and you will start seeing edgy films. You know, it's all so safe. It's so formulaic. It's all more of the same that, you know, people are watching the old films again.
Well, so it's also interesting. We did a podcast with a guy called Dino Shilele. He does a podcast called African Couch Potato.
Yes.
This is a guy who was born in, he was born in 89. In fact, the year that the film was set. grew up in South Africa in that transition period. And he absolutely loved the film and identified with that same story. So even though it is period and it is kind of unpolitically correct, if you like, it is universal. It's still universal. And as Hilt says, the studios have gone so sort of safe and all they do are these big, epic, blockbuster-type Marvel movies. And people are kind of hankering for something unique and interesting. And fascinating that somebody who grew up in that era as a black South African identified with that story.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, well, Hilton, maybe when the tide does turn, then you guys can wave the flag as being some of the first to move it back in the next direction.
Exactly.
I mean, something else that we were incredibly conscious of is not to create a movie with toxic masculinity. You know, we weighed it up very, very carefully. And if you look at the film, all of the male characters are idiots. I mean, they all make mistakes. They all goal-driven, whereas all the females, every single one of them, hold the power. They've all got the emotional intelligence. They teach the male characters lessons. So we were very conscious of that too.
Now, talking of politics getting in the way of making films, in some respect, I mean, you'd made this film for 4 years, which was quite an epic time to be making a movie between COVID and a variety of other things. But, you know, the movie does have a Jewish theme. And so to be sort of releasing it in the wake of October 7th and thinking about what it was like to be Jewish in the 80s versus now in South Africa, I think that also, you know, probably wasn't part of your necessarily what you set out to do, but I think must have come into the narrative arc as well.
Yeah, definitely. We know we did want to tell an authentic Jewish story. We also didn't want to do a kind of a revisionist history. We wanted it to be authentic, to show a spectrum across the political spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, what was fascinating is that the film official first screening was a couple of months after October 7th in December in Cape Town. And we actually made a couple of adjustments to the movie, and we weren't quite sure how it was going to be received, given what had just happened. What's really amazing is that a few people came to us, and let's just say people who you'd very much consider in the center of the woke set, and they said it was absolutely amazing that to see that Jewish story and how important it was to see that story normalized and brought to life in such an authentic way. So it did have an impact that we didn't expect, actually, after that war.
And it's interesting, actually, that There has been a few of these kind of Jewish type stories that have come up. I mean, you know, there's the wedding diary with Tali's thing, and there's I think another film that they've made which is different. So there is, given that Jews in South Africa occupy sort of 0.01% of the population, it is interesting that you guys can get a kind of broader buy-in for the story as well by setting it in a more universalistic frame.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I suppose if you apply that percentage, even globally, the amount of Jews compared to the amount of Jewish content, and there's a lot. So, you know, look at the Woody Allen movies, you look at the Fablemans. We could list hundreds and hundreds. It seems that, you know, Judaism in movies has been around a long time. And I think maybe it's because of the storytelling in our DNA or the self humor factor that we do. And I think what, again, one of the reasons we wanted to make the film was to normalize our youths. We had never seen Jewish teenagers from South Africa in a movie. And when we traveled, I remember I went to film school in the mid-90s, and a lot of guys I met there who were Swiss and German and French, and they couldn't believe that there were people like us at the bottom of Africa. They thought every white South African was an Afrikaner racist because that's what they had seen on the news. So we also wanted to tell our story and say, hey, you know, there are people like us down here too.
So talking of telling the story and sort of getting it out there, and you sort of mentioned that it exists on the streaming services, but if you made a film like this 10 years ago, what you would have gotten and done is taken probably the DVD or something, packed it into a suitcase and schlepped around the world to like festivals and Jewish film festivals and stuff. I mean, is that crowd still a way to get a film out into the world?
Yes and no. So the model has changed drastically. It's literally changing in front of our faces as we go, and we're learning this as we kind of chart this path. But yeah, it's a combination. So cinema has taken a drastic hit, as you would know. So we actually launched on cinema in South Africa, which wasn't part of our plan, but it was a delightful surprise. Both Stekenico and Imetra absolutely loved the film, put it across 30 screens between the two of them. But the numbers are small. People are not going to cinema as much as they used to. And the streamers, as we discussed earlier, are kind of getting a bit more conservative, which is odd. They used to be the sort of so-called darlings of independent film. When they started, they were really kind of experimental and doing some interesting work. And now they're looking for the formula stuff. So this is the world we're navigating. We had a great reception from MultiChoice as well, but unfortunately they're going through their own changes. So the model is literally changing in front of us as we speak, and we're interested in trying to get it out there ourselves. So it's probably going to be a combination. You know, we are looking for the right partners who will help us get the film out there. But until we find them, we're very happy to get it out there ourselves as much as we possibly can.
Yeah, I think weirdly, it's easier and it's harder than it's ever been. It's easier because there are more streamers, there are more movies being made, there's more series, there's more work for actors. But it's harder because, as Brett says, it's very formulaic. People want more of the same, at least the streamers do. They wanted to have IP based on a book, a sequel, a remake. And you just have to look how many sequels have been made. I mean, they're digging up Beverly Hills Cop, Lethal Weapon, another Mummy. You know, it's all about this IP. So I think it's harder than ever for a truly indie film. I think in the current climate, movies like Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction, Trainspotting would really struggle because they're so fresh and unique. But we have to push. You know, indie filmmaking has to survive, and we've got to find a way.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that is completely correct. When Netflix started, there was also the great thing about it was you could get something from anywhere in the world, and it was very, you know, accessible. But now it is a bit different. Let's talk about who's in the film, because you have a great combination there of there's a lot of classic South African talent, including people from our own community, but you also like dug up some newbies to be in the film as well. It's about young people, which is, you know, already an interesting, and it's not a small cast either. You know, for an indie film, sometimes costs mean that there's like one actor, but this is this there's a serious number of people that you managed to pull in, and people that South African audiences I think would recognize when they watch the film.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a hell of an ensemble cast, and we kind of, you know, we ignored all the advice. People told us, keep the cast small, don't do a comedy, don't do a period movie, and don't use young kids. And of course, we did all of the above.
The only one you didn't have was like animals. I don't know if there are any animals in the film.
We had them.
Three dogs. There are dogs in the right seat. I think we've got a great combination of, as you say, older talent or well-known talent and newbies. And, you know, when we wrote the script, some of the characters we had Rob Van Vuren in mind for Willem Wessels. We never thought he would do it because, you know, the pay is not great. And we thought, you know, he's a busy actor. He's very much in demand. He read it. He loved it. And he said yes immediately. Then there's a character, Moshek, who's the Israeli PT coach. And we thought, you know, who would be great for this? And Nick Rabinowitz turned up at a casting. And we were delighted. You know, we were huge fans of his. We were so flattered that he actually came to a casting. And he had the part. You know, there was no question in our minds. But we thought it was so obvious and such a given, we never told his agent that he had the part. and then now we've gotten to know him really, really well. And he said he was absolutely gutted because he never heard a word. He said he went to the cast and he must have screwed it up because he never heard anything back. And he said, you know, am I out? And she phoned us and we said, no, of course he's in. It's, you know,
And so those are people that I think people would know, like, and from the younger side, I mean, who are maybe a star is born via 1980s Joburg.
You know? Yeah, that was always something that, to be honest, scared us considerably, is finding youngsters who could pull off this movie and carry the emotional weight of the story. And we cast the net very, very wide. We did a nationwide casting. We looked as wide as we possibly could. And we found a few gems, but for the leads, we really struggled. And it came to, like, within a couple of months of the shoot, and we still hadn't found our lead. And then it's kind of quite a crazy story. We were going through the self-tapes. We thought, you know, maybe we missed a gem. Let's start again and go through every single casting tape that we've got. And we sat down the one night, and we started going through everything again. We came across a tape that we hadn't seen before. And Hilton and I both looked at each other and said, like, have you seen this youngster? And neither of us had. And through a labeling error, it jumped to the top of the queue. So we would just go through the stuff methodically. And because they put a space before his name, his tape jumped to the top and we never saw it. And that was our lead. So if we hadn't sat down that night and gone through every single tape again, we wouldn't have discovered him. And yeah, you know, he's a real gem. He absolutely performed like a real pro. He grew up in front of the camera, a guy called Julian Robinson. And his best mate, Brad Berman, who was his first movie ever. And the two of them just had great chemistry, incredible screen presence, and showed up on set every day and really carried it. It was phenomenal.
But with not actually any Jewish background.
Well,
no.
Go ahead, Hilton, yes.
Yeah, well, Julian Robinson, who plays Jeffrey Greenbaum, is actually Afrikaans. He's from Helpmekaar, and he was in his matric year. So one of the things we had to do is get a dialogue coach to work with him, because when he spoke English, he had learned English from watching Marvel movies and sitcoms. So he spoke English with an American accent. So we had to do some work on that. And then Dino Vavitsanidis, who plays Brad Berman, is a UCT drama student. He's a Greek guy, and also, yeah, didn't have much knowledge of Jewish culture, but we were fortunate enough in the lead up to shooting, they were both in Cape Town, and we had them over for Shabbos, and we got to, like, get them to know a lot about the culture, and they loved it. I mean, aside from eating loads and loads of challah, they really, really enjoyed the experience.
That's fantastic. So if we've spoken a little bit about the streaming, but we actually have something specifically for Chai FM listeners, if they want to listen to watch the film. Tell us a bit about how you can go about getting it if you want to watch the film, and how Chai FM listeners can benefit.
Yeah, so as we said, it's available on justnowjeffrey.com. And because, you know, we want the community to get out there and see the movie, we've got a promo code. Everybody can go onto the website. They just have to put in the promo code CHAIFM, and they'll get a 50% discount to download the movie and watch it.
Okay, so that's fantastic. So if you want to go see the film, and I guess you just, like, what, stream it onto either your smart TV or your laptop or whatever. That, or you're basically watching it off of a website, I'm assuming.
Yeah, so it's a website, but you can cast it to your TV, or you can watch it on a tablet or a phone or a laptop, whatever you want.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right, so go check out justnowjeffrey.com with the promo code CHAIFM, and yeah, then you can watch the film and see it. It's absolutely fantastic. Guys, thank you so much for joining us. Best of luck with getting the film out there, and we just hope from the Jewish radio side that the Jewish film does very, very well.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having us on.
There we go. The team from Just Now, Jeffrey, Brett Morris and Hilton Tannenbaum, talking about making an indie film in South Africa, about South Africa in the 1980s. I'm Benji Shulman, and this is 101.9 High FM.